It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, now do a podcast. I don't want to do it.
Make me.
You're not my real mom. My real mom is covered in wire.
What?
This was... It became a thing. So, oh my God. This, as far as I know, this was a real and fairly famous study they did where they took baby monkeys.
Oh, you're talking about the one where they had the wire.
Yes.
Mom versus the mom with some fur on her.
Yes, and but the, both had the milk.
Yeah,
and
so.
Surprisingly.
So the one that the with the fake mom but still had fur was more stable mentally and emotionally than the one that just had a wire.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, that's a very famous psychological study.
And it makes for an incredibly useful metaphor. Just all the time. You're like a wire monkey mom. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, teenagers out there, because I'm sure we have a lot of teen listeners.
Yeah.
If you're really mad at
us.
Your mother,
like, we're like,
tell her, clearly you're the fake mom that was made out of wire.
We're like the Bernie Sanders of podcasts. Kids love us.
Bernie Sanders, the porn star? With the goatee? I love that in my mind, everybody's goatee is black regardless of what their other features are like. So it's like Bernie Sanders... With his white hair, because he's old, but with a black goatee. It's just the uniform. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that's also in this world, because this is what you guys call a mystery episode, which means that Evil Tony and Evil William have to run things against their will. I'm Evil Tony.
And I'm Evil William.
And this is episode something, 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 mm-hmm. something, maybe. I don't know if they have four digits now.
Don't know. Don't care.
Also true. Also true. So what's up with you?
Nothing. Not a thing.
Not anything.
Nope.
You have a Star Wars hat on, mm-hmm. but the title of it is not a real title.
Of what?
A movie.
It's not?
Not one of the Star Wars movies.
Oh. Are you sure?
There's, what, seven of them at this point?
There are only seven? What universe are you talking about?
I have no idea.
Anyway.
I don't... The holiday special doesn't count. Have you actually seen the holiday special?
Well, I saw it when it aired, yeah.
No!
Well, of course I did.
Wow.
Of course I did.
As a little kid, were you excited about Bea Arthur doing the musical number?
I didn't know she was going to be in it. I knew who she was.
No, when it happened, were you like, oh my God, Bea Arthur?
No. I mean, I didn't have a problem with Bea Arthur, but I wasn't a particular fan.
How about Art Carney?
I mean, we watched Maude. And
you were big on Lumpy.
What?
Lumpy, Chewbacca's son.
Oh, no. I seem to recall...
How'd you feel about the weird old man VR porn?
I seem to recall when we watched it. Even then, we weren't very impressed. We were excited that it was going to be on television. I think we had to rush home from something we were doing with the family. And it was on, and we watched it, and I think our response to it was, eh.
It was weird because it was Star Wars, but essentially it was just a 70s variety hour. Which meant it was bad, but it was bad in the way that a lot of other shows were.
We were more impressed, I think, with Mark Hamill's appearance on The Muppet Show.
Well... Muppet Show's awesome.
C-3PO and R2-D2 were there, and I think Chewbacca showed up on that, too.
Everybody's... I want to say Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford even were on that.
I don't remember that, for sure.
Maybe they had their own episodes, and then he showed... I don't know. Mark Hamilton's a good guy.
Mark Hamill? Did you say?
I said Mark Hamilton.
You did? Who's that?
That's Mark Hamill, according to Comic-Con. I think it was Comic-Con. It was Comic-Con or WonderCon. One of the cons recently, he actually tweeted a picture. They spelled his name Mark Hamilton on his badge. Like, well, his backstage pass, essentially.
That's
like, oh my God. No, but he's terrible. A good guy. He is a good guy. I'm pleased to discover that. He's a good guy, and he seems to be a happy guy. Do you know you can essentially tweet him a picture of memorabilia you have bought with his signature on it, and he'll tell you if it's real or not.
How would he know?
Because he knows what he signed, and he also knows what his signature looks like.
Hmm.
He may not be able to know every time, but I've seen a bunch of his tweets where he's like, nope, sorry, that's fake. No, that's actually, I did sign that one. he's big on helping his fans out that way. All right, so hat thing, I guess.
Are you going to tell people how it works? Because you usually do that bit.
Okay. They have a hat. It's magic. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People like you, I guess, if you're listening to this, like to write into that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, little questions, things like that. And the hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, over here, it's clearly enslaved servants, which sounds weird, draw the note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the show. So, here's the show.
Okay, from the hat, here we go.
One of my evil cats is trying to eat the hat. You probably shouldn't do that.
This
get a shock.
Question has been condensed.
Sweetened, condensed, or just regular?
Just regular.
Evaporated.
Yeah.
All right.
Have either of you suffered from, and I'm familiar with this term, but I've never known how to adequately pronounce it. A tichophobia? Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know. Spell it.
A-T-Y-C-H-I-P-H-O-B-I-A.
Now back it up a few times, people, and listen to that and write it down yourself, and then you can decide.
A tichophobia.
That's how.
Well, whatever. It's the fear of failure, so... So you don't try things unless you're sure you can succeed. No. Whenever I'm about to embark on something, there is a little bit of fear that I might fail.
Well, and the important thing is a phobia is an irrational fear.
Exactly.
Which is why you can't really have a fear, a phobia of axe murderers.
I think, I'm sure there have been instances where I've just not even tried something because I was afraid I was going to fail. I mean, I'm sure that's happened. Probably particularly in social situations. Like if I'm afraid I'm just not going to be very successful in getting to know people or making a good first impression or whatever, I might avoid those situations because I anticipate failure and I don't want to fail, so I just don't even try. But
and yet you still hang out with me. What the heck?
I don't. I think that's kind of the exception and not the rule. For most of my life, I've kind of had this notion that avoiding something just because you're afraid of it is like the worst idea ever, because you're definitely going to regret it later that you didn't do it. You know, later when you don't feel so afraid of it, or when it's not immediately threatening you, you're just going to sit there wishing you'd done it. And when I was young, I performed. I was a vocalist and a musician, and I performed lots of places. I never, ever wanted to do it any single time I did it. Right before I went on stage, I was like, I wish something would happen so I didn't have to do this. But I did it anyway. So, you know, my life's been spent being, like, deathly afraid of a lot of things, and I just went ahead and did it a lot of times because I was deathly afraid of it, because I felt like I really need to do this. I think... As a rule, I've probably spent more time being afraid of success than failure.
How does that work? I still don't understand the concept of the fear of success.
Well, it, there's a lot of nuance. One thing that makes a person afraid of success is what's going to come next, right?
Okay.
If I let me put in the con- I don't this didn't really apply to me as a young person who was a vocalist, but I'll put in that context because it's the easiest thing right now. If you've been asked to sing a solo at school, mm-hmm. and you're pretty sure that you're going to do well, mm-hmm. well, what happens when you're done? Someone's going to ask you to sing again, right? And then you're going to be in an uncomfortable situation of saying no if you really don't want to do it. So you're probably going to say yes, and then you'll have to go through this painful, scary experience again of having to be on stage. And if you do a fairly decent job that time, and the more successful you are at it, the more likely people are going to ask you to do this thing that you find in practice to be really uncomfortable.
So if you do a shitty job, they won't ask you again.
That's right.
I see.
Or if you just don't try, then you know that you're not going to have people asking you to do something that is emotionally difficult for you to do. It probably manifests in most people's lives when they deliberately don't get very good grades. A lot of kids do this when they're mm-hmm. teenagers, especially. They're afraid.
My nephew brags about how he doesn't read stuff. We bought him graphic novels, and he makes a big point. He's old enough to read. He's a pretty good reader, but he says he doesn't read them. He just looks at the pictures. Now sometimes we catch him reading them, but he likes that image.
Well, yeah.
Not reading.
Yeah, kids don't want to be made fun of by other kids for getting good grades. They don't want their parents to have high expectations, even if they're certain they can meet those expectations. So, you know, people think if they succeed, there will be pressure to succeed again and again and again and again. And they don't know if they can maintain that. But even if they can, they don't know if they want to live under that constant pressure to perform. And it's just easier to be thought of as a low achiever.
That's why we try so little on these podcasts. it's not working. But I would agree, I do not think you have fear of failure. I don't know if I did. Like, could that be what my laziness is masking?
Well, I wouldn't know.
But that's the thing. I'm like, I'm not sure. Fear of failure, fear of success. If you're just afraid to try, how do you know which one you're actually afraid of, you know? And I don't ever feel like I'm afraid to try things.
Well, my observation is the big thing you're trying to avoid is disappointment, not failure. In fact, I think what would bother you more is if you put a lot of effort into something and you knew that it was good. Other people whose opinions you trust know that it's good. But for a lot of other reasons that are beyond anyone's control, it's never noticed. It doesn't, you know. Like, you know that in theory, someone can write the best novel ever and it can be a commercial flop because it's not promoted the right way or it's not published the right way or any number of other things. And I think you would be more emotionally challenged by that situation than by if you tried to write a novel and then you read it yourself and thought, nah, this is crap, and just threw it away and didn't worry about it.
It could be. If so, then the podcast has been really good for that.
For getting you over that?
Yeah. Because I do know that was a thing with the podcast. As much as I said it wasn't so often, deep down, I really thought and hoped that we were going to become big, huge internet celebrities and stuff like that. And now we just have, like, the most loyal dozen people in the history of the world. And now I like that.
Well,
but there were times where it weirded me out and freaked me out.
For me, fear of success is not about the pressure I think I'll get from other people by being success. The fear of success for me is always about I'm a very private person. You know, there's a certain kind of success that if it, like you're talking about, if we became like an internet sensation or something, I would be happy because it's something we did or whatever, but there would be a lot of aspects of that I would be extremely uncomfortable with.
You would clearly be the Jamie Heineman of our team.
I would be very uncomfortable with
and he pulled it off. I think you can do it.
A lot of aspects of that.
And especially because I would be so entertaining, it would distract
everybody. Well, okay, but I mean, even now, I mean, even with the few listeners we have, You know, I listen to every podcast afterwards, just as a matter of course. And it most of the time, I'm unhappy with. Well, recently in a comment, I mentioned this, that there's two conflicting voices going on in my head when we podcast. One is I'm talking to my dear friend Tony, mm-hmm. and the other is I'm talking to the whole world via the internet.
Yeah.
And those, you know, the Venn diagram of those two voices don't cross anywhere. So I often find myself saying things that I would say to you in a private conversation. It would be perfectly fine, but I'm not happy that it was said on the internet.
Whereas those two voices in my head, the Venn diagram is almost just a circle.
Which makes it even harder for me because my you know, when you're that open and honest, and I want to be open and honest, because this is about the only time we talk. So when am I going to be open and honest with you about things? And I just end up saying things that I would never say if I wasn't talking to you.
And it makes me feel like Conan O'Brien.
Well,
because apparently he's good at getting people to do that.
Well, and even worse than that.
Or maybe Mark Maron.
Even worse than that is when these two voices are fighting each other, I often don't know what to say. So I'm.
And you make some really fascinating sentences.
So I trip over my words.
You come up with.
I use the wrong words.
Really detailed explanations of concepts that you're not willing to tell us what the concepts
stuff
are.
Stuff like that. And, or I'll say something, I listen to it later. I'll make a statement about myself personally that I don't remember making, but listening back to it, and it's like completely misrepresenting me or anything I think or believe. And it's like, did I just lie to the internet and I didn't even know it? So it's a real challenge. I mean, to the extent where nobody who only knows me through the internet knows me at all. I'm so different on this podcast than I normally am in any other situation I think if people who know me outside of the podcast were to listen to it, they'd go, man, what is wrong with him? He's so different.
She has never had to work this hard for attention. That's the problem. This has literally never happened to her before.
What does she want from me?
You to pet her.
Yeah, but I can't do that and talk to you at the same time.
Yeah, you can. I've been doing it for the last 5 minutes.
Yes, but see, this is what I'm saying right now, is it's hard for me to do this. I have to really focus, or else I'm going to say something I don't want to say, and I always say things I don't want to say anyway.
Whereas I'm always like 10 minutes later, I think technically I just told my boss my masturbation habits. Oops. Like, that's how big I am about private stuff. Yeah.
It's just, I just don't. So, you know, I love coming over here and talking to you, but there are a lot of things about listening to the podcast later that really make me cringe.
I believe it. That's why I don't listen.
And I really feel sorry for people who only know me through the podcast, because they probably think all kinds of terrible things about me that
I
just aren't true.
I didn't even think of this, but so recently I got coffee to watch your movies, our movies.
Oh, okay.
And you're in the end credits of the one I'm in.
Yeah.
And she watched it and she said, so that's what William looks like. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, holy shit, you've never actually met William. That did not occur to me. And it's even weirder now, because like, this happened with my brother-in-law a long time ago. Remember, we talked about how he could picture me when he heard us, mm-hmm. but he couldn't mm-hmm. picture you until the 100th episode. But I'm like, she lives, like, she's in my circle of friends. In my mind, of course you guys have hung out together.
Well, but...
because she knows, like, all my other friends.
We've answered some questions on YouTube. I realize the picture's
true,
not...
True, yeah, I don't...
picture's not very good, but...
I don't think Coffee's looked... or looked at the video where... I don't know where it is now, but the video for the 100th episode should be somewhere.
I think the Gazette...
eventually shut it down.
Took that down. The article might still be out there, so their
we
picture...
We were so impressive, though.
I think the video, aside from them not looking very good, I thought the videos we made were pretty good. But, you know, whatever.
Showed the hat on them. If you want to see what the hat looks like, go check out the videos.
And we should make more of those sometime, because that was so fun.
But not there.
No, I don't know what we're going to do. That's part of the reason why we haven't done it again.
Also, none of this applies to us, because we're the evil versions. Phew, saved the bit.
No, I don't think I've ever had a particular fear of failure. My fear of success is pretty specific, and it's kind of ridiculous. It's like, you know, what makes me think I'm ever going to be, like, blow up, you know, famous or something? It's just dumb.
Because you're friends with me.
It's something I do think about. I mean, I...
I'll give you a spot in my entourage.
When I... All the novels I've self-published, I do with a pseudonym.
Yes, because I've noticed that.
Because it's like, when I first started doing it, I thought, maybe I don't want to put my real name on this. Because I don't... You know, what if... I mean, I didn't think very much would come of it, but I didn't know. And it was worth...
If I start publishing novels, I'm going to publish them under the pseudonym William Wright.
Don't you dare do that.
Oh, my God.
No,
come on. I just thought of that idea, but I love that idea more than the idea of having novels published. Put your picture in the back jacket.
Yeah, I just don't.
And it'll all be nice and legal, because there'll be a little thing that says, not actually the author.
I just don't want that kind of attention.
My pseudonym is going to be Getty Images. All right, and yeah, and I may have a fear of failure. We don't know. So
I don't think you have a fear of failure. I don't. I think
neither do I.
I think you.
I'm afraid that I do.
I think
I have a fear of failure.
I think you're.
I don't know what that's called.
I think you're disappointed with how the world is.
I have phobophobia.
But you don't want to be disappointed with how the world is. You want to be cool with it, like, hey, it's just the way the world is. You know, because that's the way you are with me is, hey, William, chill out. You know, the world sucks. People are stupid and so on and so forth. But I think there's a part of you that deep down inside is kind of sad that that's true.
Absolutely.
And that's part of the reason why you don't...
No, I'm absolutely sad part of me. And that part's a drag. That's the internal version of, I don't watch movies that make me feel bad. I don't indulge parts of my psyche that make me feel bad.
Well, why are you friends with me then? Because it's like, seems like I'm always constantly throwing in your face.
Because you were my boss and I felt obligated
to. No.
Now I'm just stuck.
No. Okay, wait, you know what? I'll accept that. I'll totally accept that.
At first it was because you could get me fired, and then it was because I just didn't know how to break up with you.
You wish you could quit me?
Yes. I kept trying. It's not you, it's me. I'm like, no, it's totally you. It's absolutely you.
Broke back podcast.
I genuinely and sincerely wish I could quit. Broke-cast mountain.
But I literally can't. I literally can't.
It's in the contract. This is from Stu.
Oh.
I think I should respond to him in his native language.
He seems also to think that's pretty funny.
That's my favorite bit. It's the dumbest. It might literally be the dumbest bit we do.
But somehow the first time you did it, I just could not stop laughing.
You almost fell out of your chair. I know.
And I felt bad because you were making fun of our good friend, and I don't like it when people make fun of other people.
I straight up just call him Welshie at work now.
Okay.
Based off of Futurama.
Okay.
When they had the cast of Star Trek in the future, and you found out that in the future, James Doohan died, and so they got a new character, and they named him Welshie. So yeah, that's what I call him. He says, regarding the intro to this podcast, is it chasm or chasm? He didn't say cheers. He usually says cheers. It says Stu. At least I'm assuming it's CHA-ZUM or KA-ZUM. So I want to say like Chazum.
Well,
Kazum.
Sir Guido does pronounce it Chasm.
Does he?
Yes.
You know why Sir Guido pronounces it Chasm?
You know, I pronounce it Chasm, but I mean, I don't think that's an inappropriate. I think if you looked it up in the dictionary, it would say that that's pronounced both ways, but maybe I'm wrong.
I do not think that is the case.
Really?
I think it is only pronounced chasm.
No.
But I don't know why Sir Guido pronounces it that way, but I have a theory.
Okay.
Because I've encountered this before many times. Sir Guido is a gamer and a nerd, which means he has read many words that he has not heard.
Yeah, that's...
We used to do this.
True for a lot.
We talked about scimitars with those curved swords. The verb that is spelled... okay. What do you call it? It's a homonym if it's two different spellings that sound the same. What if it's the same spelling two different pronunciations, like doing and doing.
Oh, I don't know. What is that called? I don't know. I don't know that.
I always want to use that more from Holmes. What are you doing? What? You mean, what am I doing? Yeah, what are you doing?
I don't know what that is.
But this is one of those. Honey, I don't know. So there's the thing that you mail stuff in, the secured paper container that you seal closed.
Oh, an envelope, yes. Rather than envelope.
Yes. Yeah. We always pronounce the verb envelope as envelope or envelope because we didn't know any better.
Mm. Yeah, but see,
scimitar, and don't even get us into the debates gamers have about the pronunciation of melee or melee or melee, that word, because that's all over the place. Because that comes up a lot when you're a gamer. So I suspect he's seen it a lot and just not put it together. And it's possible, and I've even run into this, that he knows the word chasm and just thinks this is a different word. Because I've had that. I've been like, oh, that's what that... That's how you spell that. I never knew that. That is my guess. It is possible that he, like you, thinks that chasm is an appropriate pronunciation.
Because I've heard people call it, you know, use that pronunciation before.
I have heard it, but I've heard it rarely. And I just heard somebody pronounce sweet as suit the other day. So I'm not willing to just go on people saying it as evidence. But I suppose that is the thing nowadays. Supposedly, literally doesn't mean what it used to, because it's become idiom, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that drives me crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I understand it in principle. Myself. But...
Well,
but it's not just that one. Irregardless is now theoretically a word.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Infer and imply now might actually mean the same thing, because people keep doing that. Yeah, well, it depends on which dictionary you follow. But there are several that adapt and change based on usage.
Well, as they should, really, I mean.
Well, and if we're doing it by usage, then irregardless is absolutely a word, and infer and imply might be pretty much the same thing.
I mean, I come...
And literally can totally be figurative.
I studied sociolinguistics in college, so I've got a heavy bias toward usage being something that determines...
And so do I in every period of history that's not mine. Right now, pisses me off.
Okay, well...
Weirdly, this is a topic that came up once in an episode of Barney Miller. I thought in my head I watched a lot of Barney Miller when I was a kid, but I don't think I did, because one time TV Land did a marathon of all of them, and I watched a ton of it, and I did not remember most of it.
Oh, well, I'm sure I don't remember any of it, but I know I watched a lot of it.
That show was good. Hal Linden was good. Ron Glass. Well,
just about everybody in there was good.
Roger Poets. Have we even talked about Abe Vigoda finally dying?
Yeah, we did.
I feel like that's weird.
Yes, we did.
I feel like Betty White's replacing him now. As the person who you keep thinking must have died, but she totally has not. But she's a little bit too much in the scene. Like, you're not confused because you see her.
Yeah, she's out there.
Yeah. I don't know who the new Abe Vigoda is then.
I don't either.
It's not George Peppard. He's been dead since 91.
Yep. Thanks for... Well, let's just have a whole list of people it's not, shall we?
Charlemagne? Not him. Maybe Angela Lansbury. What's she doing these days?
I've drawn something else out of that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
David Vid wants to know.
What does David
It's Vid great to know that he still listens. Who or what is your dragon in your dungeon? Mm. Who or what is your dragon in your... Am I supposed to know what that means?
Well, Dungeons & Dragons is a game.
Yeah.
And it's called that largely because originally you would go through a dungeon and at the end you'd fight a dragon.
Okay.
So, metaphorically speaking, in your life.
Yeah, okay. Who or what is your... It's kind of like asking what's your kryptonite.
It is quite like that. I mean, it's not literally the same question, but it's the same metaphor style.
But it is a little more complex, because the kryptonite would be your dragon, but your dungeon. Like,
Yeah, what's your dungeon?
Yeah, that's
if
kind
by
of,
dungeon
that's nuanced.
You mean butthole, then my dragon would be institutional grade toilet paper.
Oh, this is a good question, really.
There we go. Yeah. So do we have to define our dungeons first?
I think you should just do both first, because I might have to think about this one myself.
All right.
I'll bet you know off the top of your head.
Well, to me, the dungeon just has to sort of be life. Your life. Because essentially it's the dungeon is the level of the video game or whatever. So, you know, the dungeon is my life. So the dragon, oh, so many joke answers. Most of them get me in trouble. probably my fear of failure. in my case, the dragon is literally heroin. Sorry. I watched an old SNL sketch today for Heroin AM. And it's heroin that doesn't make you... It's non-drowsy heroin. So you can have heroin and still take the kids to school and get your errands done.
Non-drowsy.
Yes, non-drowsy Heroin AM.
Okay.
From the makers of Cocaine PM. what is my dragon? This is tricky. Because my life is pretty good. I mean, I'm certain my dragon is some trait of mine. I'm certain it is not something external in my case.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true for me too.
But I'm also fairly confident that it's something I'm probably ignorant of or in denial of. So it's hard for me to answer such a thing.
Well,
if the dungeon is my house, then the dragon is Ezzy. Sorry, kitten, you can be a dragon too. Seriously, he just glared at me when I said that.
He's
like, what the fuck, I'm not a dragon? No, you can be a dragon too. Kitten, you're fine. This is good radio.
Well, I think... I think that the dungeon is something that constrains or sort of traps me.
Okay.
But when you think about it, that's not enough. Just because something corners you, that doesn't mean it has to do, you know, control you or even bother you. You know, a lot of people actually feel pretty comfortable in confined spaces, safer even. But there is something in that space that that, you know, specifically makes me feel trapped there and not just, you know, sort of confined there.
I really feel like you're actually reciting a monologue from an indie film, but I don't know which one.
I think my dungeon is Well, I think it's like what you said. The thing that it, whatever it is, it's not something external, it's internal. So
bats.
So that kind of makes both of us what our dungeon would be are kind of our own minds, you know, our own individual, you know.
I'm totally trapped in my own mind.
That part of the human experience that is...
Yeah, you said the phrase the human experience. You're definitely reciting a monologue from
an
indie
film. I'm saying, you know, our culture tends to overemphasize the subjective, personal, and narcissistic aspects of human experience. You know, our culture tends to think of people as these individuals who are sort of trapped in their own selves, and all of the effort is expended in connecting with other people, when that's actually not true. Connecting with other people is actually pretty, it's kind of our nature to do that, and the intense loneliness and alienation that we feel is really not so much...
Sorry, as you just put her claw right in my nipple.
That would be very painful.
It really was.
the intense alienation that we feel is a
Alienation, that was a good show.
Is a function of our culture, not really our nature. But there is an aspect of human experience that's subjective and that's private and that's sometimes very difficult to share with other people because it's hard to put into words, you know.
I always walk around feel. Well, I mean, if we really want to get to it, so my dragon is the parts of my self knowledge that I lack. But if you're going that way, then that's true for everybody. That's just a universal. It may manifest in different ways.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But this is the thing, because I am, you may have noticed, fairly open person.
Mm-hmm.
I tend not to keep a lot of secrets, especially about myself. I will tell most anybody most intimate details about me. And usually I am stopped not by personal embarrassment or concern or a sense of modesty or privateness, but by social propriety. I won't tell somebody something because I know it will screw up the social dynamic.
Right.
You know? But then every once in a while there's something. And I don't, like, I couldn't even give you an example right now, but there's every once in a while where I'm suddenly very uncomfortable about some aspect. And it's not, I never see it coming. And if I sit here right now and try and think of something that's like that, I don't have it.
No, yeah, I know what you mean.
I think it may be tied to flaws in me that I'm not super aware of sometimes. So then I get defensive about it. Because I have a lot of flaws that I totally accept. And you can give me shit about those or talk to me about those or whatever. And it's not a big deal because I know it. I'm like, yeah, I suck at that. And I'm working on it, and I'm sorry, and whatever. But yeah, I think if you find one that part of my brain knows is really an issue, but the rest of me hasn't come to terms with it, then I'm like... And I get really panicky and stuff in those situations.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common experience for most people. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. You mentioned something about being trapped in your own mind or whatever. There's a certain portion of all of us that's like that. And for me, in that space that, you know, where I feel lost or where, like you're talking about, where I'm just starting to face things that I didn't realize about myself and I'm not even in that acceptance mode, I'm in that denial mode or whatever, there's a very specific voice in that space, in that little dungeon that I can get trapped in. That's very hateful toward me, you know, that hates everything I think, everything I feel, everything I stand for, that thinks I'm a total fraud, you know, that thinks that, you know, everything that, you know, that thinks I'm worthless. And, you know, this is the voice that can dominate when I'm going through a period of pretty heavy depression.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally don't have that voice.
Yeah.
Because my deal is anxiety, not depression. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's
the two are very closely linked, but they're definitely distinct. I have learned that over the years.
But my voice is specifically like it's like hateful and abusive toward me, you know, which is weird because my
are you sure you're not just listening to recordings of the podcast? Because no. I'm pretty hateful and abusive.
Which is weird because my parents aren't like that. For example, I mean, I did not pick that up from my parents at all. I don't know where this came from because nobody in my life. I mean, I'm a white male who did reasonably well in school. I was a performer, and people were telling me, you know, complimenting me all the time on stuff I did. I mean, I've led a really charmed and sheltered life for the most part. I've spent most of my life, actually, I was talking to my wife about this the other day. I've spent most of my life, when I was 18, I had a picture of the world where there were certain things that basically the whole world understood to be true. And if I was going to go out and make the world a better place, I was going to build on that mountain of truth or whatever. And I've basically spent the whole rest of my life since I was 18 realizing that that mountain has been long eroded away. And there's actually a pretty sizable hole where I thought there had been a mountain. I mean, you know, I would say even in the last year, I've realized, oh, well, the pit's a little deeper than I even thought. And that's been my whole life since I was 18. And that's how That's how idealistic and idyllic my upbringing was until I was 18 years old. So where this really hateful, vile voice in my head that's never turned toward anyone else, only me, comes from, I have no idea. But it's definitely there. And sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and maybe because I've been having some bad dreams or something that are, it's something continuing on from my sleep and it'll just be horrible. And I won't want to get up and I won't, you know.
Yeah. Well, taking in a vacuum, my first response to that is maybe it's something neurochemical.
Well, I mean, I've wondered about that too. You know, because depression is something that my mom suffered from huge, big time. And my dad struggled with it a little bit, too.
Anxiety's been running down my family tree. Those things often can be like that.
So when you're dealing with anxiety, it's not like a, what's it? It's not like a voice going over and over telling you to worry about stuff, it's just a feeling.
The biggest manifestation for me was always, although just recently I'm learning that a lot of things that I just think are normal in like how I behave and how I think about things may actually be tied to, not the least of which, I even feel like I brought this up recently, is my thing with punctuality. I'm always on time. I'm frequently early. And I get really annoyed that people who are late, and most people are sometimes. And in my head, I mean, I never really articulated it, or I might have caught on earlier. What the fuck is wrong with, like, almost the entire rest of the world? Because everybody's fucking late, and it's not hard to fix, and what is wrong with you? And only recently am I like, oh, that could be a thing. But no, the way it most commonly manifested for me, and arguably still does, but not really, because now I'm on good meds, was I would let something, the smallest thing going wrong, convince me everything else was going to go wrong. Basically, I could both predict and then make sure it happened that I was going to have a horrible day at like 9 a.m. if just the right thing happened. And I would just, and then as if to convince, I would start pulling in other shit that didn't even have to do with that day and stuff. I mean, I used to actually, on multiple occasions, I woke up panicked that I would never own a house.
Really?
Yes. I would somehow never achieve enough success.
That's a very specific anxiety.
In my head, that was a very fundamental thing of like adulting, basically, was to eventually own a house. And I was panicked that I would never have enough success and financial security that I could do it.
Interesting.
Stuff like that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Not so much anymore. I'm going to tell you a completely unrelated story because I want to and because part of this discussion reminded me of it.
Okay.
You're not going to like it, but I'm going to tell it anyway. Because it involves nudity in movies.
Okay.
Specifically a movie I saw. It was a horror movie. Go figure. I believe it's called Starry Eyes. Maybe Starry Eyed. I very much did not like it. But I actually think it's probably a really good movie. I just didn't like it.
Okay.
At its heart, it's basically a horror movie about a wannabe actress in L.A. who is so desperate for a role that she basically... It's metaphoric in a lot of ways. She's whatever you're willing to do for the role, but in this case it involves actual like satanic ritual and she's slowly transforming into something else.
Okay.
But clearly it's the metaphor, you know. So I'm watching this, and we get to a part pretty early on, maybe a third of the way through, where she's going back to a callback audition, and it's with the people that we know are the evil people, but she hasn't figured it out yet. And they want her to strip naked. And even it's part of the audition process or whatever, and it's a big deal for her. But she does it. And as this is starting, I'm really annoyed. Because I'm not in the mood for that. I'm like, I wanted a horror movie. I'm not interested in anything remotely titillating or anything. I purposely picked one that I didn't think was going to be sexy or anything like that.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, God. But, you know, whatever. Maybe they won't be too focused on it. But then, didn't show it. Clever camera angles and stuff.
Okay.
I'm like, hey, it's one of those movies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still clearly R-rated. People have already dropped F-bombs. I'm pretty sure people are going to get stabbed in eyes or whatever. But But we're not doing that. Cool. Normally that would kind of annoy me because I'm a pervert. But this particular night, this is what I'm in the mood for.
Okay.
And similar things come up a couple other times where, like, in certain movies, we clearly would have seen nudity there, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And then, near the end of the movie, the rituals happen. She's totally bought into being terrible. She's done some terrible things. And there's this weird scene where she's essentially transformed and crawling out of what's like a caul or like a amnio sac kind
of
thing.
Yeah.
And it turns out she's underground and all that. But, so we're doing this, and it's interspersed scenes of her clawing her way out of this while the people are doing the ritual somewhere else and stuff like this. And in that, she's nude, and we totally just see the nudity.
Okay.
And it's the same actress. And I'm like, what is going on? Why do you... Because they went to trouble. I mean, they did very careful. Okay. And then, no, let me finish, because I figured it out. I have...
Okay.
Okay. But, and then later... Once she's done, like, we have a sort of now she's evil and living her life. And in this, she even goes so far as to sit down in front of her vanity naked and, like, basically admire herself.
Okay.
And so we're like, and I was like, we didn't switch actresses or anything. It's very quick. And then I realize it was a very deliberate and, I think, brilliant filmmaking device. Because early on, even though she's getting naked in front of people, essentially her character... is innocent and modest like that. Right. And then later, once she is transformed, but it's entirely in the viewer's eyes because in the situation, she was naked both times.
Yes.
So the people in her world saw her.
Right.
But in this one, we only get to see it. And so it's very symbolic.
Right.
And I was like, that's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I agree.
And not something most horror films would bother with because nudity frequently either... is incidental. You're doing a scene and it seems silly to bother to cut it out, basically. It's like, it's a scene and people are naked and there's a reason for it. It'd be weird to suddenly film part from behind the shoulder. That could be a reason. Or, much more commonly, because nudity will make it more popular.
Right.
And it's a commodity in that instance. And so, that's how my mind is thinking. But then I was like, oh my god, no, this was a very deliberate filmmaking choice.
But it surprises me, though, that given the most likely demographic for a film like that, that would work. You see what I'm saying? Like, the whole point was for this... I think you're right. I think there was a filmmaking choice here, and I also agree that it's a pretty brilliant one, that would work if I were watching the film.
Yeah.
But for a normal horror movie aficionado, is it going to work on them? You know, because they're sort of desensitized
possibly
to nudity.
Not, but in horror films... tie really closely to indie film more than anything else, in my opinion. A lot more when you get, you know, people pulled up by their bootstraps to make a movie for $3 or whatever. It seems to be horror. Because, again, due to its transgressive nature, you can... I even hate to say this because I love horror films, but it's way less difficult to get your message across than a lot of other things. You don't have to be particularly subtle in your things. But, so, in my imagination, this was the director's vision. And the director was concerned with their vision, not necessarily with what demographic would be watching it and whether or not they would get it.
Yeah.
That would make it. You could also make the argument that on some unconscious level it still might sort of kick in.
Do you put these films, though, I kind of do this, maybe it's not right for me to do it, but I kind of put films like this on a spectrum where you've got like, you know, slasher films that are almost supposed to be funny on one extreme. And on the other extreme, you've got films that are horror, but they might be called thrillers instead because they're not. There's no gore.
Yeah. No, definitely. And actually, reviews often bring up a lot of this. There gets a lot of, is this horror or not? Is that more thriller? It's more comedy, whatever. I tend to do that with all movies nowadays. I have a number of axes that I use to determine my feelings about it. A big one is whether or not I enjoyed watching it. another one is whether or not I thought it was skilled film craft. That's becoming bigger as I get older.
Yeah. That's a big one.
And all the little parts I've talked about, acting, right? You know, I can take those apart. But I also go for what it is compared to what do I think they were trying to go for. So, like, if I think it's being a satire, did it work as a satire?
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Because there are movies that are not meant to be satires that work as satires, and the opposite. You know, the thing where there are movies that I think if they were deliberately trying to make a comedy, I would not find it funny, but the fact that I'm pretty sure they weren't makes it hilarious. You know, that kind of thing. Or things that, like, I would find this movie bothersome, except I can tell the self-awareness in it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that kind of thing. And so...
So this movie was closer to the thriller side of that spectrum, maybe.
I would say so. Yeah. It had strong elements of body horror in it, though.
Okay.
Because that's the thing. She's falling apart, and at a certain point, she looks like a zombie, essentially. Mm, and that's a big aspect as well.
Yeah,
but the whole thing is just very clearly metaphor for... This is clearly somebody who had a hard time in Hollywood dealing with some issues.
Wants to portray that what is by now a trope is you go to Hollywood and your self erodes as you try to sell yourself, almost prostitute yourself.
And it becomes a thing. They have
Hollywood.
Her friends, it's a big thing. Her friends represent her old life kind of thing And there are some conversations there where you have, and there's one character in particular that is very, like, not subtly at all, is a friend of hers that undermines absolutely everything she says and does. Like textbook perfect. like, oh, I'm sorry I stole that part from you, and then, oh, but I've got this other audition. Oh, yeah, I saw that. It looked really dumb. Why would you want to do that? And then she goes, and it went well, and she says, yeah, I looked it up, but it's kind of a small part, isn't it? Yeah, but it's from this company. Yeah, but they haven't made anything in a while. And, like, when she's going to the callback, it's like, that's what you're wearing? Like, it's all very textbook, and they have weird debates and stuff. Like I said, I feel like it was probably a good movie. I just really didn't like it.
Well, at least they put effort into it.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like what we both arrived at with Dave's question is our dungeon is... And these seems
our
like...
Our dungeon is ourselves. And our dragon is ourselves.
Well, for you, it's anxiety, and for me, it's depression, I guess. But this doesn't seem like a very interesting answer.
No, but that's because we're too smart.
What do you mean?
I mean that any other answer would just be a metaphor masking the thing.
The truth.
Exactly, because that's what it's down to. Well, and it's like...
My dungeon is the dive bar down the street, and my dragon is a bottle of whiskey.
Yes, but...
But we know that
exactly, because who sends you to the bar, and what are you drinking the whiskey to hide?
Right.
I know it's funny, but it's also... That's totally true.
Yeah.
When I was... And again, I think I've talked about this before. That should just be on repeat. I think I've talked about everything before at this point. But when I was fairly young, under 10, definitely. But I mean, a kid. I remember the realization, I definitely have talked about this before, that a person can have a family and raise a kid and raise them the best they can and be proud of them when they're an adult. A different person cannot do a family and throw themselves into their career, become an architect, and design their dream building and watch it be built and be proud of that building. And if the sense of pride is the same, which as a kid I should add the item. Because of context, it probably very rarely would be the same.
Right.
But if the sense of pride is the same, the rest does not matter. At the end of the time, how you felt about what you did is going to matter in the sum of your life than what you did.
Yeah, you have talked
and
about
it's
that
because
before.
And it's because how you feel about things informs what you do. I mean,
sure.
If you could... start a porn company and make a giant porn empire, and somehow you felt as good about that as you felt about, like, the environmental initiatives you support and stuff, it would make no difference. You are the sort of person who would not get that feeling of satisfaction from forging a porn empire. So it's not that it doesn't matter,
so then I wouldn't
but
do
it's
it.
That the end result is the feeling.
Yeah, well.
And how you felt at the end.
Sure.
That's not necessarily a result to the remaining people. But I think that was the thing for me to realize that your goals don't have to be something specific. Your goals should be what you want them to be.
Mm, okay, right, right.
And I mean, and I've moved that along since then, because I was born with a lot of support and belief that I could do anything and that I was going to be really amazing. And I have a remarkably mundane life now. And I'm so proud of that life.
Well, you know, what I've often said to people
who on the street who don't ask.
Well, who sometimes talk about things that they haven't achieved that are like big, you know, things that would be noticeable, stuff that they're, that parents sometimes brag about their kids doing. You know, and I think maybe I've even said this on the podcast before, is that, you know, the Abraham Lincoln, things that people remember him for, he didn't do by himself.
Yeah.
The things he did by himself pertained to relationships that were personal, like with his wife and with his. And if there's any such thing as a judgment after you're dead, that's the stuff you're going to get judged on, not the big stuff everybody knows about that you actually only took part in doing with a big group of people. Yeah. So that mundane part of a person's life, that's the most important bit. It's not that doing those other things isn't also important or wouldn't be cool or shouldn't be done, but if you had to choose between doing those things and doing these so-called mundane things, well, you should always go with the mundane things, because they are the most important. They're the things that at the end of your life you're going to think more, you're going to be more happy that you spent time doing than even all of that other
stuff. You need a story based on that, because modern entertainment media tells us the exact opposite.
People are
always sacrificing themselves for the greater good, essentially. It's always about that greater good. I'm really amazed anybody can use that term anymore, because I feel like at this point, movies have basically made it a given that when you use the phrase greater good, you're the Nazis in that story.
Yeah, that often is true.
So I'm really amazed that anybody ever uses that phrase anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Because I feel like, that's like nobody names their kid Adolf anymore either. Because, if you say greater good, you're the Nazis in that movie. I still love that sketch, that Mitchell and Webb sketch where they're the Nazis in the bunker and stuff. And it's like, I've been thinking about it. Are we the bad guys? There's a skull on our house. Whose skull is that? It's the skull of our enemies. That seems like a bad guy thing to do.
Well, yeah, and in the Star Wars extended universe, all of the Empire ships were named horrible things.
Well, like revenge. But to be fair, when your religion is called the dark side, you're not fooling anyone.
Right, but another aspect of the extended universe was that a lot of the stormtroopers and a lot of the rank and file really thought that the rebels were terrorists, you know? But all of their flagships are called Vengeance and We Hate Robots and stuff. I mean, it's just horrible, horrible names.
We have two destroyers in the area. Shall I send them? Which two? The Vengeance and the We Hate Robots. Yes. Send them. We Hate Robots, please.
We Hate Robots.
Oh, my God. Then we're going to make a webcomic about the lesser-known Star Destroyer, the We Hate Robots.
Anyway, they're all bad.
No, I'm with you. And somebody could make parallels of our modern society with that, but I don't want to. Also, we're done with time, so we can get the fuck out of here.
Yes.
So, listen to the other guys. We don't care. Don't. I think they're on Facebook. tell them we're tired of this. And write that on the blog. And stop listening, because then they'll stop, and we'll probably get to stop.
Well, we've suggested that before.
Maybe
it doesn't.
Yeah.
Work.
So don't listen to. You can listen to this.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, but after this,
stop.
But also, after we say after this stop, then stop.
Then stop.
After this.
After that.
Stop.
But not before. After.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.